We got fans back in the building tonight. Felt a little bit weird having actual flesh and blood people in the audience tonight. But I gotta tell you, it was nice. It was nice. It was the closest thing maybe to normal that I have felt watching a wrestling TV show in many months. It definitely added a different feel to the show tonight on Dynamite. I don't know where Excalibur was. Excalibur, they tweeted a photo earlier today of Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur was with them, and Justin Roberts was in the background. But no Excalibur on this show. So, obviously he's back, but he wasn't on camera tonight. Chris Jericho did join on commentary. There were a lot of things that happened on this show. Not the strongest episode of Dynamite, but we're going to get into it all here tonight on the Solomonster Sounds Off Edition. This is your AEW Dynamite review. Let's get into it. It is a Thursday night, and this is your AEW Dynamite review here for August 27, 2020. I am the Solomonster. Usually we don't do Dynamite on a Thursday, but everything's, you know, up is down, left is right. It's 2020, nothing makes sense anymore. I am the Solomonster. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage, as you did last night for your NXT coverage. I am back here 24 hours later. We're doing it all over again. The only thing that changes are the initials. Last night it was NXT. Tonight it's AEW. I thought actually a very good episode last night of NXT. So how did AEW stack up tonight? It was a good show. Not one of their strongest shows. This was not a favorite show of mine. I usually don't do the rating stuff, but if I had to go 1 to 10 on this show, I'd probably clock in at around a 6, 6.5 maybe, somewhere around there. The key was they moved things along heading into the pay-per-view, which is next weekend. But in terms of in-ring action, if you were looking for some really great matches and just a lot of, you know, really kind of big things happening on the show, this was not the show for you. There was some really good promo work. They did move some of the stories along. The main event was kind of a mess. It looked like maybe production-wise they ran out of time. Something got screwed up. I'll talk more about that later. The women's match was just a complete mess. Oh, yeah. Not a strong half hour or so to tonight's show, but it was a good show. On the whole, it was a good show. And yes, the big story probably is that we had fans back in the building for the first time since March. Now, they had fans in the building last week or a couple of weeks ago. 10% capacity. So probably around 500 or so fans that they sold tickets for. They bought tickets. This was the whole plan where they had the pods of people, and scalpers on the secondary market were trying to screw everything up by selling only certain tickets from pods, which defeats the whole purpose of trying to keep people together and distanced from people they don't know. But that was the plan. They took every precaution they could, distanced. You had to wear a mask. But 10% capacity, and we got our first taste of what that feels like. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to be in that crowd, but watching on TV, it was great. I got to tell you, it felt good to hear crowd chants and actual applause and boos and not have stuff just piped in. Frankly, it might be safer to have stuff piped in. I'm not going to get into a whole debate about Thunderdome versus what AEW is doing, because frankly, WWE, you know, what they're doing is a lot safer. They went the virtual route. All I can tell you is it sounded good and it felt good. It felt a little more normal tonight. I could appreciate that. Tony Khan gave a pre-show speech, kind of like a pep talk of sorts, to the people in the audience. I don't know if you saw, someone uploaded video online of his little speech. And he asked people, please keep your masks on. Please don't take them off. We can't shoot the crowd if you don't have your masks on. Please, you know, stay distant from each other. And he said, you know, it's been a long time since we've had live fans in the audience. So I have to remind all of you, please, no F-bombs, no holy shit chants. He goes, we're going to be live on TNT. I guess no 7-second delay. I mean, you can't block that kind of stuff out. but he was basically begging them not to curse. But the fans seemed to be on their best behavior. I didn't hear any holy shit chants or asshole chants or anything like that, not even for MJF. And everybody cheered, and Tony Khan walked to the back. So that was his big pre-show speech to the people who were there live in attendance. Now, before we get into the Dynamite show, there is some news. There is some news to get into here that you may not have heard about, you may not have seen in the last few days. And of all things, we're going to start off tonight with Shaquille O'Neal. We're going to start off with Shaq here on the Dynamite Review. And you might be wondering, well, why Shaq? What does Shaq have to do with Dynamite? Well, I'm going to tell you. That's why you're here. Shaquille O'Neal just signed a new multi-year contract with Turner Sports, which is owned by Warner Media. Warner, of course, owns TNT, which is where AEW airs. And 9 years Shaq spent so far on Inside the NBA. It's one of the most, if not the most, popular show probably on the network. And he is the biggest star by far. He's the biggest star on TNT and in that family of networks. And there was a story on the Athletic website about Shaq and his new deal. And there was one very interesting paragraph in the article that stood out to me as it pertains to AEW. So I'm going to read it to you right now. It says, there is one last part of O'Neal's Warner Media contract that is in the embryonic stage at best, and it involves All Elite Wrestling, which just so happens to be the review that you guys are listening to tonight. So hence why I'm bringing this up. O'Neal is a big wrestling fan who has appeared at many WWE events, as well as the now defunct World Championship Wrestling, which they did not mention used to air on TNT. O'Neal said he had a message for Cody Rhodes, an AEW vice president and also a well-known in-ring performer. He said, I would love to fight Cody. He said, print it, write it, text it to him, call AEW up, and tell them. Let me first say, that match will never happen. We will not be getting Cody against Shaq. Shaq talks a lot. Shaq's a very entertaining guy. You know how many years we had to hear Shaq against Big Show, and they even shot angles that could have set it up, and then we never got the match. The closest thing we got was they kind of interacted with each other in the Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania 1 year, but we never did get that match. So the idea of Shaq and Cody, I mean, Shaq would eat Cody. I'm not talking, like, literally he would eat Cody alive. So there will be no Shaq against Cody, but if I'm Tony Khan, the point of all this is, if I'm Tony Khan, right, because there's been a lot of talk recently about the guy Kevin Riley at Turner that was released. He was a big ally of Tony Khan's. If there was no Kevin Riley, AEW would not be on TNT right now, and he got the boot. He got cut a number of weeks ago. And some people were rightfully concerned. What does this mean for the future of AEW? What if there's somebody in the hierarchy there now who doesn't like wrestling? It doesn't matter how well Dynamite's doing. We've seen this story play out before with WCW, and it made people very nervous. Well, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm reading this, and I'm listening to this, and I'm saying to myself, you've got the biggest star on the network, right? You've got the biggest star in the Turner Sports family, the biggest star on TNT, talking about my company and singing our praises and wanting to work with Cody, and it's got to be music to this guy's ears. That is nothing but a positive for AEW. Music to his ears. You know what else is music to his ears? The ratings that Dynamite did last Saturday. They were in a very unusual time slot, and Warner executives were said to be thrilled at how the show held up being on a different night. And don't forget, they were also delayed by half an hour because the NBA game went long. And then they were competing with the NXT TakeOver. All things considered, the show did really well. I think the number was 755,000 on a Saturday night for that tape show. And the other reason I'm sure that Warner really enjoyed how the show did is it allowed them to occupy three of the top five spots for the night on cable in the 18 to 34 demo. So all of these taken together are very positive signs. If you are a nervous AEW fan, if you're nervous about the future, even though they signed that big contract at the beginning of the year, I would think stories like this kind of put your mind at ease. Things are going to be okay. Because, you know, frankly, things would be far worse if there was no AEW around. Competition is a good thing. I say it all the time. It's true. But you don't even have to like AEW. You know, you could be like Cornette and talk about, you know, the Kenny Olivier. And you know, he talks like he hates the product, but he reviews it too. You don't even have to like it, but you have to understand that you need something like that around to counteract WWE for there to be another option out there. And the good news is it looks like all is well on the Western Front. So I wanted to bring that up first. The show tonight opened with the Tag Team Gauntlet. There's a big tag team gauntlet match on tonight's show. The winners will go on to All Out on September 5th to challenge Hangman Page and Kenny Omega for the AEW tag team titles. And it opened here with the Young Bucks against the Natural Nightmares, Dustin Rhodes and QT Marshall. Last we saw them on Saturday last week, they were being dragged out at the end of the show, right? Cody was killed and his wife was laid out. Dustin and QT got laid out by the Dark Order, so here they were back. No Brandi Rhodes, because like I said, she and her husband were killed by the Dark Order. If you missed that end of Dynamite last week, you missed a hell of an angle. Now, you know I'm not the biggest Dark Order fan, but that was a hell of a finish to Dynamite last week. Unfortunately, some people probably didn't see it. Chris Jericho came out to do commentary, and this is one of my favorite parts of the whole show. Jericho comes out to do commentary, and he looks out and he sees all of the fans, and he gets very excited, and they are singing along to Judas. They are singing along to his theme music. We have not heard this since March. It has been 6 months, or almost 6 months, 5.5 months, since we have heard a live audience singing Jericho's theme song. Music to my ears. It was a beautiful thing to hear. So, it's a Dustin Rhodes match, which means there's going to be a destroyer, right? It's part of his repertoire. It's part of his arsenal now. Every match, he does the destroyer. And more often than not, you know, it looks pretty good, you know? I mean, I don't know how old he is now, probably early 50s, but he pulls it off. He almost fell on his head last time, but he pulled it off here. Hit the destroyer on Matt Jackson. And I thought the rest of this, it wasn't a long match. It was just average stuff. It was an average tag team match. Double knees from the Bucks to QT Marshall's face. They call that the BTE trigger, I believe is what they refer to that move. And the Young Bucks pin QT Marshall to advance to round number two of the gauntlet, which began immediately. I thought maybe they would stagger it. The second match would be at the end of the first hour. And maybe the finale of the gauntlet would be the main event. I didn't know how they were going to structure it, but they just got the whole thing done in the first, like, 28 minutes of the show. They just crammed this gauntlet in there. One match right at... Well, I guess that's the point of a gauntlet, though, right? I mean, silly me, I guess so. When you're talking about a gauntlet match, if you're gonna separate the matches out, that's almost like a tournament. That's not really a gauntlet. So I guess under gauntlet rules, I guess that's what you do. You come right out. Best friends were out next for match number two against the Bucks. This was much better than the first match. This was probably the best match on the entire show. Young Bucks and best friends. We had Trent on the apron with Nick Jackson. And he stands up Nick Jackson. He goes for a pile driver on the apron. Nick slips out of it. And Nick Jackson hits a super kick to Trent. And he gives him a deadlift German suplex on the apron. Deadlift German to Trent. Trent fights back, ends up hitting Nick with a spear out on the floor. And Matt Jackson got a hot tag, hit his rolling Northern Lights suplexes on Trent. Best friends tried for strong zero. Matt made the save for his brother. And Nick hit a 450 to Trent. Trent was kind of draped in the ropes, and Matt was holding him. He hit the 450. So the Bucks were setting up for the Meltzer driver. They were going for the kill. And Matt's in the ring, and he's got Trent, and on the apron is Nick Jackson. And all of a sudden, out from nowhere, comes Hangman Page. I guess he came out of the crowd. I didn't exactly see where he came from, but he grabs onto Nick Jackson's leg. And in the ring, Trent counters into a cradle on Matt for the win. Hangman has this conflicted look on his face like he's resentful over what he just did. He looks remorseful. The Bucks can't believe it. What are you doing? And Hangman walks through the crowd. Now, that part of the crowd was empty, because remember, the fans that they put in the building were not allowed on the same level as the wrestlers. They were farther back. They were up in the upper deck. So Hangman walks into a part of the crowd. There are no people there, but he looks like a lonesome dove over here, and he's walking off all sad. He keeps looking back. Again, very remorseful over what he just did. And I love it because, you know, if you remember what happened a week or two ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, we had that backstage segment, Tully Blanchard, FTR, Hangman comes in. Hey, guys, what's going on, man? What did you do to the Rock and Roll Express? You know, you faked the knee injury. And that's when Dax Harwood explained. He goes, yeah, look, I had to do it because I had to know where everybody stood. And he goes, you know, Hangman, you and my partner, you and Cash were the only two people who a few weeks ago when I hurt my knee, you went to the back with me. You showed concern. That's how I knew I can trust you. And he said, you know, you don't want the Bucks to win this gauntlet match because then you're going to end up right back in their shadow all over again. So Harwood was already planting the seeds in Hangman's mind a week ago about why the Bucks should not win this gauntlet. This is why you don't want them to win. And here he acted on that. He came out. He cost him the match. But it was FTR planting the seed. They used Hangman Page to get what they wanted. They used that man to get what they want. They played mind games with him. And look, it was the correct outcome. I said this last week. You would be insane to give away the very first match between the Bucks and FTR. These two teams have been teasing a match with each other for years. Literally years. On social media, they've been teasing a match between the two of them. You would be out of your mind to give that match away for the first time in a unadvertised, in a gauntlet, on a random episode of Dynamite. Why would you do that? Doesn't make any sense. So thankfully, they did not do that. Common sense prevailed here. And FTR, they were out next with Tully Blanchard. They got the jump on Best Friends. This was the final, third and final match of the gauntlet. And they took control right away. Chuck Taylor did get a couple of moves in there, a couple of shots, near fall on Dax. And Taylor was selling, you know, some damage from the previous match with the Bucks. FTR posted him with his legs, posted him, and that played into the finish. Harwood used the inverted figure four with an ankle lock, and Taylor, he's reaching, he can't get to the ropes, he had no choice but to tap out. FTR wins, and it will be FTR challenging Hangman and Kenny Omega at All Out next weekend for the tag team titles. And so everything is set up perfectly. As I pitched it weeks ago, it should be FTR getting to those belts first before the Bucks beat the Bucks to the belts. And then they can be all arrogant about it. And when they finally do meet, it will be a tag team championship match, probably a series of matches with FTR defending against the Young Bucks. You know, you could have done a triple threat match at All Out. You could have had the Bucks, FTR, Hangman, and Omega, and have FTR go over by beating Hangman and Omega, not the Bucks. You could have done that too. But I like this better. I don't want them in the ring together against each other at all until they meet for the first time. So everything is set up perfectly. I like what they did here. It was the right outcome. And I enjoyed this. We got a Darby Allin vignette. Darby had tack still in his back, stuck in his back. He was outdoors somewhere. And he was wearing a giant Ricky Starks mask. Yeah, like a paper mask over his face. He climbed to the top of some bridge. Again, I have no idea where this was. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like the fucking Golden Gate Bridge or anything like that. A lot of people climbed to the top of the Golden Gate Bridge. But he climbed to the top of a bridge, and he was trying to, you know, basically prove to Taz and Ricky Starks and all of them that I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of anything. And from the top of this bridge, I figured maybe there was like a bungee cord attached. No bungee cord. He just dove off. Straight down. Because the guy is a psychopath. He's an adrenaline junkie. He's got a death wish, all of those things. He's batshit crazy. Darby Allin is batshit crazy. So he dove off a bridge. They have announced another casino battle royale. Battle royale. See, battle royale is like the old school way of calling it. Like when I was growing up as a kid, I would hear them refer to it as a battle royale. Especially in the NWA. I would hear that a lot. Now they just use it interchangeably. So call it whatever you want. They're having a battle royal at All Out. 21 men, you know, playing off the casino theme. 21 men will be involved. We know the first two, Darby Allin and Lance Archer, will both be involved. The winner of that battle royal will earn an AEW championship opportunity at some point down the road in the future. They don't say when. Only that the winner, like Brian Cage, right? Like Brian Cage back at Double or Nothing, will earn themselves the right to challenge for the championship at a later date. And then we had the Murder Hawk Monster himself. Lance Archer was here. We have not seen Lance Archer in action, I feel like, on Dynamite. He's been on Dark. But we haven't seen this guy in the ring on Dynamite in weeks. When he actually gets TV time. You know, he's killing dudes. He's throwing people around. Finally, he gets a match here on TV. Unfortunately, his poor victim, Sean Maluda. And if that name sounds familiar, we've seen Sean Maluda before. The last time I saw Sean Maluda was on NXT. I think he was with Evolve. He made some appearances at NXT. It's been a while since I've seen him, and here he is popping up on AEW. I bet after tonight he wishes he was back in NXT. Lance Archer killed this guy. He's absolutely murdered him. I guess it's in his name, right? Murder Hawk Monster. He murdered this guy. Gave him a sickening chokeslam. He got great height. I mean, it's a beautiful chokeslam. He got this guy so high up in the air and slammed him down. Pulled him up before the three count. He wasn't finished with him yet. He hit the blackout. He rammed his head into the mat a few times. And finally, he got the pin. We got a Jake Roberts promo in the ring after. Jake the Snake was there. So he was talking about the battle royal that they're going to win. All of a sudden, out comes Taz and his troop. We have Taz, we have Brian Cage, we have Ricky Starks. I love Ricky Starks. I've been singing his praises. I'm going to be singing his praises for a long time. If you've not seen some of the Ricky Starks stuff from BTE, from Being the Elite, you should watch that. If you have any doubt in your mind about how good of a promo this guy is, I would dare say that Ricky Starks is one of the best promos in wrestling right now, period. Any promotion. I can't say number one, but if I made a list of like the top five promos in wrestling right now, you know, MJF would be on there. I think Ricky Starks might eke his way on there. He's that good. So if you still find yourself watching him going, I don't see what the big deal is, then you're not looking hard enough. There's enough material out there to get yourself familiar with this kid. He's one of the best promos in wrestling right now. But the fans were really into a potential confrontation here between Lance Archer and Brian Cage. And this was an idea that I floated a few weeks ago. Maybe somebody else in the chat did as well. Somebody else had floated the idea, I think, of the FTW title being used maybe as something of like a tough man title. And I took that idea and said, well, it's perfect because you could do something between Lance Archer and Brian Cage. You want to make it a big man title where these, you know, big tough guys just beat the hell out of each other? You can use the FTW title for that. To me, if he's just going to carry the FTW belt around and not ever defend it, then what is it really? I mean, it's just a prop. What does it really mean? So I would be on board with that idea. The fans sounded in the building like they were on board with the idea of a match between Archer and Cage. But they kept him apart. And Darby Allin was the last one to the party. He came skateboarding in from outside. When I say he skateboarded, I mean he had like a fucking rocket, you know, attached to that skateboard. He came skateboarding in, bolted into the ring, tackled Ricky Starks, knocked Ricky out of his shoes, brawled to the back with him. And that was the segment. We got a very cool video package here. I really like this. Hikaru Shida is going to defend the AEW Women's Championship at All Out next weekend against the NWA Women's Champion Thunder Rosa. Again, you missed it if you didn't see the Saturday episode of Dynamite. They're bringing in Thunder Rosa. Thunder Rosa is still the NWA Women's Champion. She is still signed to the NWA. But there is a working agreement that has been reached between Billy Corgan and Tony Khan. And in this video package, it was all, you know, they had footage from NWA Power of Thunder Rosa winning the championship and wrestling on Power. They had Billy Corgan doing some of the voiceovers here for it. And he said that he talked about being proud to be working with AEW. And so it's official. They are officially working together. There is at least the beginnings here now of a working relationship between the NWA and AEW. And, you know, I talked about this because somebody asked me about this. Somebody sent them maybe a mailbag question a few weeks ago and said, you know, what would you think if the NWA and AEW started working together? And I kind of laughed it off because we've heard about people leaving the NWA, requesting to leave the NWA. Ricky Starks did not resign. He left the NWA. You know, Zicky Dice, who is or was the television champion. I don't know what his status is right now, but he was being given his release as well. And, you know, I mean, there's been rumors about other people. I don't know what's going on with James Storm and Nick Aldis and people like that. Eddie Kingston obviously left the NWA. He's now on Dynamite. So I look at it and I go, here's a promotion in the NWA that did not have television. They had a YouTube show. And they're in a state of flux right now. There's a lot of uncertainty around the future of the NWA. And so what is to be gained on the AEW end is what I was thinking by partnering with the NWA. If you want talent from the NWA, you could probably get them without even having to work with them because they're just going to, either their contracts are going to lapse or they're going to request to be released because they're going to go work somewhere else. What is the incentive for AEW to work with the NWA? But then you see someone like Thunder Rosa being brought in. And Thunder Rosa is very talented. And what is the biggest weakness that AEW has? Their women's division. So right now, it sounds like maybe a one and done at All Out. Rosa against Sheeta. I have no idea if Thunder Rosa is going to be wrestling for them beyond that. But wouldn't it be nice for AEW to have access to somebody like Thunder Rosa for its women's division? So that's where I could see there being a potential benefit for AEW. For the NWA, I mean, of course, if you're presented with the opportunity to work with AEW, if you don't say yes to that right away, then you're an idiot. Because the NWA right now, for all intents and purposes, they're just completely on hiatus and their future is in doubt. So if you can get some of your talent on TNT... And here tonight, you get footage of NWA Power being aired on TNT. I mean, Billy Corgan would have been nuts not to want to work something out with Tony Khan. So they have found a mutual understanding with each other. I think it's cool. I got to tell you, because I haven't seen an episode of NWA Power in a number of months. I was watching it every week. I was reviewing it on my show. I miss it. I don't know if I miss it as much as I miss Lucha Underground. I'm still kind of hot about that we never got a proper ending to Lucha Underground. But all their talent is gone anyway, right? Their talent has... All the Lucha Underground talent is spread out. They're in WWE, they're in AEW. Maybe some of them aren't wrestling anymore. So, I mean, that there's no coming back from that. The Lucha Underground is dead and buried. But I miss NWA Power. You know, it was a fun, easy show to watch. And seeing highlights of it here just reminded me of how much I miss it. And look, I mentioned Nick Aldis, you know, he's the national treasure, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. You know, he's worked with Cody before. Perhaps we see Nick Aldis at some point making appearances on AEW Dynamite. He's not doing ring-wise, he's not doing anything else right now, so why not? They showed the contract signing, which was literally just Sheeta and Thunder Rosa in a room with the supposed lawyer, the AEW attorney, and they signed a contract, and they did the boxing or the UFC style pose that you would see like at a big press conference where Sheeta was standing there and Thunder Rosa put her fist up and they posed. It was very simple, but it was effective. And I'm looking forward to it. It's one of the matches I'm looking forward to most, frankly, at the pay-per-view next weekend. I think Sheeta and Thunder Rosa has the potential to be very, very good. Better than most. women's matches that you will see in AEW. MJF. MJF was out for a contract signing. Here we go again. Back-to-back contract signings here on this show, although this one was actually in the ring. And poor MJF. Poor MJF. Yes, by the way, Khaled in the chat is correct. You know, we were talking about people who have left the NWA, and you could add Stu Bennett to that list. I don't know exactly what his status is, if he's going to be doing more work with WWE after next week. I loved him on in the booth last night on NXT. I would love for him to become a permanent fixture on NXT going forward. Nigel McGuinness is probably not going to be able to travel here for a while, and you can get him up and running on NXT UK. I would love a team of Mauro Ranallo and Stu Bennett, you know, Wade Barrett. And Beth Phoenix will be there because she's, you know, the third announcer. Vic Joseph is the odd man out. Sorry, Vic. I'm sure they could find another spot for him. But I hope we get to see more of Barrett going forward. But he's another one. You know, he was brought in when Cornette was canned or quit, depending on who you believe. And he's yet another name peeled off away from the NWA. Which is, so again, that's what I mean when I say that their future is very much in doubt. But MJF was out. He was in a neck brace and he had a walker. He was selling the injuries from the paradigm shift a couple of weeks ago that Jon Moxley gave him in the ring. Boy, one paradigm shift and this guy's in a neck brace. He's got a walker. I'm surprised he didn't have an oxygen mask and a tank that he was carrying around with him. He was talking about these injuries. What a devastating finishing move. That's kind of like what the punt kick used to be with Randy Orton. Until Shawn Michaels decided to no-sell it. Now what the hell does it mean? So he's out, and Moxley comes out, and they mention that Moxley was indeed faxed a copy of the contract that MJF's lawyer said he was going to send him. It wanted him to sign a contract agreeing that at the pay-per-view, Moxley would not use the paradigm shift. So Moxley comes out, he's got a copy of the contract in his hand, and he sits down and MJF is cutting his promo and he says, you know, when we're done here, John, I want you to practice social distancing after this. Kind of like your hairline. And the crowd goes, ooh, and Moxley laughs and Moxley says, hey, don't worry about it. You'll get there one day. Which unfortunately is true. All of us. Well, one day we will all get there. So he says, one day you'll get there, but first you got to hit puberty. The fans reacted to that, and they chanted Moxley's name. And MJF said, Moxley is not a wrestler. He's a glorified goon. He said that, you know, Moxley wants to have MJF by the steps. He wants him by the tables. He wants him in the crowd. He wants him by the chairs because that's the only wrestling that's the only style that Moxley knows. All he ever grew up studying, he said, was idolizing guys like the Sandman and New Jack and John Danzig. We got a Danzig mention here on Dynamite. How about that? First, Eddie Kingston gets camera time on TNT, and now a Zandig name drop. And then he mentioned Onita. He said, someone like Onita, he says, or as I would call all these guys, hot garbage. MJF had the gall to call Onita hot garbage. Now that's a heel. Meanwhile, he says, I grew up studying actual wrestlers like Buddy Rogers and Ernie Ladd and Tully Blanchard. And that's the difference. You know, John, that's the difference between you and I. MJF made a comment about Moxley's wife. That got a rise out of Mox. He stood up. And the lawyer threatened to sue. He goes, we're going to sue you. If you do anything right now, I'm going to sue you. So Moxley goes ahead and he ends up signing the contract. He signs the contract. He says, you know, I realize I don't need the paradigm shift to beat you. What you're doing here is you're forcing me to get creative. I don't need the paradigm shift to beat your ass. So he signs the contract. MJF, I thought he was going to rip the neck brace off, but he immediately starts laughing. He's slapping high fives with his entourage. The lawyer is laughing. The lawyer can't believe he fell for it. And he puts his hand out to shake Moxley's hand, and Moxley shakes the lawyer's hand. And Moxley thanks them for being so cool about what I added on page 17. And MJF gets all freaked out. He says, wait a minute, there's only 16 pages in this contract. And he looks at his lawyer. He says, did you not read the contract before he gave it back to you? And sure enough, they turn to page 17, and Moxley explains that next Wednesday night on Dynamite, he's going to have a tune-up match, and it's going to be Jon Moxley one-on-one against MJF's lawyer. I didn't get the lawyer's name. I'm guessing he's not a lawyer, by the way. But he's going to have a match with MJF's lawyer. And if he does not show up for the match, then MJF, he forfeits his championship match at All Out. So the lawyer has to show up. Like leading a lamb to slaughter. He's got to be there next week. And the paradigm shift, unlike at the pay-per-view, here the paradigm shift is going to be 100% completely, totally legal. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm so used to dumb baby faces on TV. All my baby faces are usually very dumb and easily distracted. That when we get a baby face who actually outsmarts the heel, it's kind of nice. We don't get that too often on TV. Yeah, every now and then WWE will show me they haven't completely forgotten about how to do what they do. But yes, more often than not, in WWE or even AEW, we get dumb babyface syndrome. That's what I call that, DBS, dumb babyface syndrome. And here Jon Moxley outsmarted the heels. So I like that. That part of it I liked. We don't get to see that often enough, unfortunately. We had The Butcher, The Blade, and the Lucha Bros, Eddie Kingston's boys, Eddie Kingston's new faction, all together as one now. Eight-man tag against Griff Garrison, Brian Pillman Jr. making his Dynamite debut. He's made a whole bunch of appearances on Dark. This, I believe, was his Dynamite debut. Sonny Kiss and Joey Janela. The last few weeks, AEW has been trying out Brian Pillman Jr. and Griff Garrison as a tag team. And I've seen Garrison do, you know, when Steve Austin, when he was in the Hollywood Blondes, he would pantomime the camera. You know, he'd go like this, right? Stunning Steve. I've seen Garrison do that. I don't know if they're just trying to be a new age version of the Hollywood Blondes or what. But anyway, they're trying them out as a tag team. We'll see where that goes. I mean, maybe they'll develop into a very, you know, very competent tag team. AEW has a very strong tag team division. So maybe that's the way to go. So Pentagon hit the, I guess this would have been the highlight, really, of the match. He had Joey Janela out on the apron, and he hit Janela with a package pile driver on the apron, which, in case you didn't know, was the hardest part of the ring. Because I know if I didn't tell you, you guys would never know. It's not like the announcers tell us every 5 seconds. I think tonight alone, I heard Chris Jericho mention it about 1,000 times. WWE, Michael Cole, they mentioned it 1,000 times. So yes, the apron is the hardest part of the ring. Pillman got some offense in. They gave Pillman some offense. He looked good in there. He was flying around. And it is still very eerie to watch him because he does look so much like his father. He really does. Like facially, at least, and the hair and all that. Even the body type and everything. He really does remind me a lot of his dad, which is not a bad thing. But Tony Schiavone made the comment. Jim Ross made the comment. It's very noticeable. So they were calling him Air Pillman. He was flying around. He got some offense in. But he got double-teamed by the Butcher and the Blade. And then the Lucha Bros finished him off. And Pillman ate the pin. But I thought he looked great. I thought he actually looked very, very good in this match. Eddie Kingston grabbed the microphone. I love it when that happens. Eddie Kingston grabs the mic when the match is over. And he warns everybody in the Casino Battle Royal. He goes, doesn't matter who's going to be in this Battle Royal. These 5 guys that you see here now, Pentagon, Phoenix, Butcher, Blade, and Eddie Kingston. So 5 out of the 21 people are going to be part of their little faction. They're all going to be in the Battle Royal. So now we know 7, right? Because it's them plus Darby and Lance Archer. And I would have to imagine Brian Cage, Ricky Starks. So we already have a sense of almost half the people who are going to be in this Battle Royal. We'll find out more next week. Eddie was great here. When he first got into the ring and he grabbed the mic, people in the crowd were chanting for Eddie Kingston. They were chanting, Eddie, Eddie. And Kingston just goes, I know my own name. Shut up. He's so fucking good. He's so fucking good. He's so great. And again, you know, the thing with the NWA Power show, just to go back to that for a second, if you watch an episode of NWA Power, more often than not, you're not going to get a great, like a great match or, oh, this great in-ring action. You're really not. It's not a show that was ever really built on great in-ring action. It was a show that was built on great personalities, promos. That's really what they were trying to get over on that show. So it was the perfect environment for somebody like Eddie Kingston. To watch an Eddie Kingston match, honestly, I don't really give a shit. I could, yeah, take it or leave it. That's not what gets me excited about seeing Eddie Kingston on TV. It's what he may or may not say when he has a live mic in his hand. That's when I really get interested in what Eddie Kingston has to say. Or he's in the back and he's cutting a fiery promo about something or someone. That's where Eddie Kingston can sell tickets. That's where this guy is money. But a guy like him and a guy like Ricky Starks, who I, you know, I've talked up his promo ability, it's no surprise that these guys were coming over from the NWA Power Show because that's what they were highlighting on that show, their personalities. You know, put a mic in their hand, let them talk. Now they just have a bigger platform to be able to do it. So instead of having, you know, 200,000 people on a YouTube video, you know, they'll have 700,000-800,000 people on TNT and then throw DVR in and you could have a million people watching Eddie Kingston cut promos every week. It's great. And it's long overdue. The Dark Order was out next. They were carrying a casket with them. And inside was Keith Lee's horrible entrance music and his gear, I hope. Bury that forever, please, 6 feet under, please. I'll talk more about that on Sunday. Another Jim Ross flub, shall we say. The Dark Order comes out, and actually Jericho even mocked him for this one. The Dark Order comes out, and Jim Ross sees Evil Uno. Evil Uno has a mic in his hand, and he calls him Evil Ono. Now, I forgot the comment that Jericho made. I think it might have been a Yoko Ono reference. Maybe a Sonny Ono reference. Really, who calls him Evil Ono? When has he ever been mistakenly called Evil Ono? What's going on here? I know JR likes the Moscow Mules. I mean, who among us doesn't like a good Moscow Mule? But does he have him, like, under the desk during the show that we just can't see him? I'm starting to think that might be the case. You know, I could see Jim Ross hitting the party scene down in Florida. Maybe not now during the pandemic, but like I think he just rented or bought a place down in Florida so he can be closer, you know, because he's, instead of traveling back and forth from Oklahoma all the time, I could just picture Jim Ross like hitting the clubs. You know, he's got the Moscow Mule in his hand, taking it with him from place to place. JR hitting Miami Beach, wearing his button-down flower shirt, right, with the collar open a little bit, showing some of that chest hair, telling all the women about his barbecue sauce. You want to try my barbecue sauce? I got mustard, too. Anyway, they revealed inside the casket was 10 of the Dark Order. He popped up out of the casket. He had a Nightmare Family jacket. He had the Cody Nightmare Family, that awful, shitty tattoo on the neck, and they're all mocking Cody. And they tell him to get out of the casket, take that jacket off, put that jacket in the casket, and slam the lid shut. And he does. And out comes the new TNT champion, Mr. Brody Lee. Brody Lee is the new TNT champion. You missed it if you didn't watch last week's episode. He squashed Cody in 3 minutes. A very surprising finish to the show last week. But a dominant win and something that was desperately needed if they want people to take Brody Lee seriously and the Dark Order seriously. They went from Dork Order to Dark Order with one angle. Not the biggest Dark Order fan. But if you're going to push them, then you got to do what these guys did on TV last week. Squash Cody, kill him, beat up his family members, leave him laying, show no mercy, show an aggressive side, a serious side that you have not yet shown. So I loved what they did last week. This segment here, I didn't like this segment. I just thought this segment was kind of a little hokey for me. Brody Lee talked about beating Cody for the championship. He introduced the newest member of the Dark Order, Anna Jay. who apparently is going to go by the name 99. She now has a number assigned to her. She is the Queen Slayer. They called her the Queen Slayer because she put Brandi Rhodes to sleep last week. Dustin and QT Marshall came out for the attack. They were quickly overwhelmed. Scorpio Sky came out. Anna Jay spun him around, slapped him in the face. And before he could even react, Brody Lee hit him from behind, knocked him down. And Brody Lee escorts Anna Jay out. Matt Cardona, who I almost forgot is on a short-term per-appearance deal with AEW. Cody is one of his best friends. Cody got taken out, so Matt Cardona shows up on stage. He hits the Rough Rider, which I guess now he calls Radio Silence. Hits Radio Silence on Evil Ono. Cassius Ono. Maybe he was getting confused with Cassius Ono. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt here. I've never heard that before. Seriously, there are some names that you can fuck up, but that's new. I'm sorry. I find that hilarious. Evil Ono. That's going to be his name from now on. So he takes that Evil Ono, and he hits the ring and dumps out Stu Grayson. So we got to see Cardona back on the show tonight. Cardona, you know, look, happy for him that he gets the chance to show what he's made of and show what he can do and contribute on a different brand. He doesn't do anything for me. I don't get excited when Matt Cardona comes out. It's just like, eh, all right, whatever. I kind of put him in the same category with Dustin and QT. And that's not a great category to be in if his goal, let's say, is to be high up on the food chain. I don't see it. He looks great. He's in the best shape of his life. But doesn't really do much to get me excited. So then Dasha finds Hangman Page at the bar. I mean, where else, right? He's at the bar. He's very, very sad over what he did. And before he can answer her question, in comes Matt and Nick. And they're very upset. They're getting very emotional over what happened earlier. And they say, you know, you're nothing but a drunk. And Matt takes the drink and he splashes it in Hangman's face. And he tells him, you know what? We're done. You are out of the Elite. And the Bucks walk off. And the Bucks leave. And I got to tell you, Matt Jackson's acting here was so cringy. This was terrible. He was trying to, like, fake cry or at least pretend like he was crying and getting emotional. And maybe it's just because whether it's watching BTE or whatever, like, I'm always used to seeing the Bucks in these parody skits where they're just making fun of people and they're making fun of shit. And everything's always one big joke with them. So when I hear Matt Jackson here trying to fake cry, it sounds like he's trying to fake cry. And he's going to bust out laughing any second. He goes like, You know what, man? We're done. We're not friends anymore, man. Like, that's what it was like. It's like a fucking third grade play. I thought his acting here was just terrible. And this was not a good segment. Again, furthering the story... Hangman's great. I love Hangman, but I thought Matt Jackson here was just, this was not good. Big Swole handicap match against Dr. Britt Baker. Rebel. They went back and forth about five times on what to call this woman. Flat out at one point. I think it was Tony Schiavone or it was Jericho maybe who said, what's her name? Is she Rebel or Reba? Call her whatever you want. I'll call her one thing. I'm sure she's a very nice lady. I have nothing against her, but my God, this was awful. and she was a big part of why. This was terrible. This match was a mess. Britt Baker is fantastic. She didn't wrestle. She was still in her wheelchair. She had a face shield on to protect her injured nose. But it was Britt Baker, Rebel, and Penelope Ford in a handicap match against Big Swole. Kip Sabian was outside the ring. And Britt Baker told Swole before the match, she said that if you can find a way to win, I will allow you to have any kind of match. The match that we have it all out, you can do any kind of match you want. So you can tell, you knew right away where this was going. Baker, like I said, she spent the match outside. There was a terrible looking spot. Just awful. Where Rebel got caught. She was up top. And she got caught on the top rope. And Swole, I guess, went to give her, I think it was a Rana, off the top. and she does the move. So Swole does her part, right? She goes up and she goes to do the Rana. And Rebel took the slowest top rope Rana that I've ever seen. It would be like, again, picture it, where I'm on the top rope and maybe I'm terrified, maybe I'm afraid of heights or something. And somebody gives me a Rana and they go down and then I wait 2 seconds. And then I launch myself. That's what happened here. It looked awful. Absolutely. It looked Bush League amateur, slow motion bullshit. Then Rebel for the finish. She grabbed a crutch, accidentally hit Penelope Ford with it. There was one crutch the referee took away. Then she got another one. And they had Swole hooked up. Swole ducked. She hit Penelope Ford with the crutch, knocked her out. And Big Swole got the pin. And so Big Swole is going to be able to pick the stipulation now for the match with her and Britt Baker. But I guess she needs time to think about it because we don't know what the stipulation is because they never asked her. She celebrated. They didn't say anything about the stip. So I guess we're going to have to wait and find out exactly what the stipulation is. But again, I watched this match, and I think Rebel can be a fine character. She could be like a lackey, continue to be the lackey for Britt Baker. If you really want to strengthen and boost this women's division, you're not going to boost it on the back of somebody like Rebel. I mean, it's just not going to happen. And yet I'm watching the show, and in the crowd, I see Eva Lise. I don't know if Diamante was out there, but I saw Eva Lise. So the women are there. The pieces are there. You just got to put them together. But when you put some of these people in the ring that really don't have any business being in the ring, this is what you end up with. So yeah, this was no good. Eva Luno and Anna Jay of the Dark Order came back out. They came back out and they had a folder, and this plays into what I was just talking about with boosting the women's division. They came out and Evil Ono had a folder in his hand, and on the folder it said, "Join us," I think is what it said. So join us. They walked over to the audience, and there was Tay Conti, who, again, was released months ago by WWE. She tagged with Anna Jay in the women's tag team tournament, the deadly draw that just wrapped up. And so Anna Jay is now part of the Dark Order. They're presenting Tay Conti with a contract, I guess, to come join the Dark Order, and she's looking at it, and she's thinking about it, and she hugs Anna Jay. So now the friends, the partners, are reunited, and Tay Conti will now be a part of the Dark Order. They're now going to be stablemates. She's very good. Conti is very good, and I don't even think she's at the point where she's the best that she could be. She's good, but there's a lot of potential in her to be even better than she is. Not exactly sure why WWE let her go. I know she was very unhappy about the fact that they weren't doing anything with her. I mean, surprise, surprise. How many times have we heard that story before? And she was doing her own, like, proposing her own ideas and stuff, just trying to get over and trying to get something going. And I guess they just didn't have anything for her. And so what are you going to do? You're going to waste your career away doing nothing? Now she's going to get an opportunity in AEW. It's people like her, I think, that are going to be a turning point in this women's division. You get people like her signed. You bring in people like Thunder Rosa, even if it's just for special appearances and stuff. And maybe when things calm down eventually, travel-wise, and they can get people back like Riho and some of the other people that they had to let go, whether it's a Sadie Gibbs or a Bea Priestley or whoever it may be, then we might finally be able to really bolster this division and see what's there, you know, and see what kind of matches they can really have. Because it really is the weak spot right now. It's the weak point. It's the Achilles heel for them in this company. So then we got to the main event here on this show, which was Matt Hardy against Sammy Guevara in a tables match. And frankly, a match that I was very surprised they did not save for the pay-per-view. I don't know if it's just a case of they already have enough matches, they have the show mapped out, and they just feel like there's no room for it, which would be kind of funny, given what we saw here tonight, because this was a mess. This main event, it was just a total mess. And I'm not even talking about the match itself, per se, but just how this all went down. So, first of all, Chris Jericho made a very interesting observation. He pointed out the fact that this was the first time that Matt Hardy has performed in front of a live audience since he debuted for AEW. I believe the show where Matt made his debut, which would have been March 18th, I think. That was the first pandemic show. Now imagine Matt Hardy's debut, the way they did it with Vanguard 1 cutting to Matt in the audience. Okay, now they did it that way because there was no audience. So if there was an audience, Matt wouldn't have been in the audience. But imagine if they had a packed crowd of 5,000, 8,000, 10,000 people the night that Brody Lee debuted and Matt Hardy debuted, and the reaction that that would have gotten would have been fantastic. But we were deprived of that. So this was the first time that Matt has been able to perform and come out and make an entrance and everything in front of a live audience tonight, which I hadn't really thought about that, but I guess that's the case. I guess that's true. So they had just come back from commercial. And I figured, all right, that's the last commercial break because the show has like 8 minutes left. And they usually don't take commercial breaks after like 9:49, 9:50. They come back from commercial and they go right into another break. Picture in picture. Who gives a shit? Hey, I don't care about the picture in picture stuff. I can barely see what's going on. So they go right back into a commercial. So this entire match practically took place during a commercial break. This is your main event. This is not some mid-card match on the show. How does this happen? The only thing I could think of is something on this show went long. Maybe it was the Moxley MJF segment. But something got screwed up in the production of this show. Because between the commercial break stuff and the fact that almost like how abruptly this ended, this ended up being a mess, basically. So they come back and Sammy is busted open. So I didn't even see how it happened. Maybe somebody else was watching picture in picture. I couldn't tell. I just see that he's bleeding. And he's got this really sick gash on the side of his head. And Matt lays him across a table outside the ring. I guess the gash is payback for what he did to Matt, right? I'm sure Rebby Hardy is sitting at home stroking her cat, you know, laughing. So Sammy is laid across a table. And Matt comes flying off the apron. Sammy moves and Matt crashes through the table. But in a tables match, you have to put your opponent through a table. So apparently that doesn't count, even though he went through. You have to be put through. You have to be propelled through a table by your opponent in order for the match to end. And it might be that way in WWE too. I don't remember offhand. So Matt gives him a twist of fate. He puts Sammy's head in a chair. You know, like you're going to pilmanize someone's ankle, but you put the chair around their head and neck instead. We've seen people do stuff like that where you wrap the chair around the guy's head and you throw him into the post, right? This time, he put the chair around his head and he gave him a twist of fate. And that actually looked pretty cool. So Matt goes under the ring. He pulls out another table with the word deleted spray painted across the table. And he slides it into the ring and he positions it so the steel chair is opened. And he positions the table over the chair. So the table is on top of the chair. So whoever goes through that table is going to land on the chair as well. And so Matt starts climbing up. Sammy, all bloody, he cuts him off. Sammy climbs up. He gives Matt a superplex through the table and the chair for the very sudden win. With the commercial breaks, this match felt like it was 90 seconds long. This was very disappointing. It just felt very rushed. I'm going to assume that something went long and it just screwed everything up. Because otherwise, I don't know how this was structured this way, but this was a terrible way for this main event to end here. But the show wasn't over. Orange Cassidy, good old OC, you can see him off in the background. And he just, like a madman, like a bat out of hell, he just sprints towards the announce booth where Jericho is and goes flying. I mean, he launched himself. Jim Ross sounded frazzled, like he didn't see it coming and maybe he got hit. I don't know. Probably Orange Cassidy knocked over his Moscow Mule and he was very upset. But he launched himself over the table, tackled Jericho. Jericho's trying to get out of there and Orange Cassidy is just, you know, he's going nuts. Orange Cassidy getting revenge for what the Inner Circle did to him on the last episode of Dynamite. Or maybe it was 2 weeks ago when they held him upside down and they were pouring the bubbly up his nose. It's like they waterboarded this poor guy. So this was his revenge. I like that. I like that intensity from him. But as far as the main event, big disappointment there. I don't know what happened. And so an end to what I thought overall was a good, but not a great episode of Dynamite. This was not one of their better shows. but it had its moments. The promo work was very strong, especially in the Moxley-MJF segment. And they set the stage well, I think, for the pay-per-view coming up next weekend. The Tag Team Gauntlet stuff, I give a thumbs up on that. And that's pretty much it there. So next Wednesday, we got one more episode of Dynamite. The go-home episode of Dynamite is back at its normal time slot, 8 p.m. next Wednesday. And it's going to be Santana and Ortiz against the Best Friends. I love the comments Santana made. They had a promo where he mentioned that when they vandalized Trent's mother's van, that he wishes that his mother was in the van. I was like, oh, that's cold. That's cold. I like that, but that's cold. So they're finally going to meet next week. Chris Jericho's going to have a tune-up match against Joey Janela. The Young Bucks and Jurassic Express team up to take on Private Party and SCU. And the winner of that match will then face each other at All Out. So if the Young Bucks and Jurassic Express win, that's the match at All Out. If SCU and Private Party win, that's the match. I'm sure SCU and Private Party would have a very good match, but the match that you want to see at All Out is the Young Bucks and Jurassic Express, because how are you going to have one of your bigger pay-per-views of the year? You already don't have Cody. Cody's doing an injury angle. He ain't going to be there. How do you not have the Young Bucks on that show? How do you not have Jurassic Express on that show? So that is going to be the pay-per-view match at All Out. I have no doubt. And Jon Moxley goes one-on-one with MJF's lawyer, which sounds ridiculous, but it's the go-home angle. The babyface is going to get his revenge on the... I mean, who among us doesn't hate lawyers, right? Unless it's your own lawyer, then you love him. Can't live without him. But that's the match they're doing next week. And so that is the that's the Dynamite show set for next Wednesday. Again, back in its normal slot. So that means I'll be back here next Wednesday in my normal slot, reviewing Dynamite for all of you. Here's the Twitter poll results so far. An overwhelmingly positive response. 82% thumbs up, 17% thumbs down. So you guys seem to have liked this show probably a little bit more than I did. I'd go a little bit lower than that if it were me, as far as the overall rating. But you can vote right now at Solomonster on Twitter and let me know what you thought of tonight's show. That poll's going to be open. They're always open for a couple of days at least. So you can go right now and vote on there and let me know what you thought. Dry Chicken Without Flavor, NBA on TNT crew with Shaq, Ernie, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley. We'll probably do AEW Dark segments or AEW wrestlers making appearances on Inside the NBA segments. Shaq coming to AEW is gold. I'm telling you, man, Shaq, look, Shaq's still a big name. He's the biggest name on that network. And anything that he can do to facilitate that is going to be nothing but positive news for AEW, because it's going to get them press. It's going to get more eyeballs on AEW from the NBA audience, but it just... it keeps them in their good graces, you know? There probably is no AEW without that TNT deal. That's how important that deal is. No different than how important WWE's TV money is. You take away all that TV money that WWE makes, the only thing they have left is the Saudi Arabia deal. I mean, that's how important the TV money is. They're not even running live events. They're out of the live event business right now. So that's how important all of this TV money is. Anything like that, if Shaq's a big AEW fan, then they should thank their lucky stars, because they are very fortunate for that to be the case. Kelly Sullivan with the $20 Super Chat drop. That's the freaky Jeff Hardy Super Chat, I believe. They're all listed down below. AEW is making a mistake not having Darby Allin against Ricky Starks at All Out. I would rather they have a singles match. You know, one of the matches that I really enjoyed from Revolution back in February before the world went to shit was Darby against Sammy Guevara. That was my second favorite, and I think maybe the second best match on that show, behind the Tag Team Championship match, which was just phenomenal. But the crowd reaction to those guys, you know, when I watched them out there, I remember watching it thinking when that show was over, the three names that really stood out as the future of this company, like the young, I don't know if homegrown is the right word, but, you know, kind of like young homegrown AEW stars, like not necessarily WWE guys, that they could really build around for the future coming out of that show felt to me like Hangman number one, Darby number two, Sammy number three. And I still feel that way. But that match with Sammy and Darby was a lot of fun. And you could have had a similar match like that at All Out, you know, between Darby and Ricky. So instead, you put him in the Battle Royal. I don't know. I mean, Darby was already in the Battle Royal. Or not. I guess it wasn't a Battle Royal. I guess it was a ladder match at Double or Nothing. But he was already kind of lumped into a match like that. So it is kind of disappointing. I agree. I think I would rather have the singles match. Chris Pantaleo with the $5. Darby did not win the WrestleMania contest, so he dove in the river to retrieve The Rock's Intercontinental title that Steve Austin threw away. So you're assuming that championship is still floating in that river 23 years later. I wonder what that title would look like if it really was submerged in the water for that long. What do you think it would look like? I'm gonna guess it doesn't have the old shine that it used to have. But it probably would still look a lot nicer than the 24/7 title. All right, you know what? Let's hear from some of you guys. Feeling a little froggy here, so let's hear from the people. 845.
Hey, am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Oh, hey, Jason. Wow, can't believe I'm actually on here. It's been I've been watching you for about a year. I've seen some clips for the past few years, so I'm really excited to be on here. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So what's you get the first question of the night.
All right. So I really enjoyed AEW tonight. I thought overall the show was great. The promos were great, and the matches were great except for the big Swole match. I just wanted to ask what match are you mostly looking forward to for All Out?
For All Out, the matches as they are now. I said I'm looking forward to the women's title match. We know the tag team title match. We know the main event. We know the battle royal. I think they may have announced another one or two matches. Honestly, I got to tell you, it's probably the women's match right now. Believe it or not, for a company that, you know, their women's division has been, you know, picked apart a lot, and I think rightfully so. But as things stand right now, like the idea that we're going to get Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida champion against champion for the AEW title. I don't expect Thunder Rosa to win, but I'm really looking forward to that match. Probably that one and the tag team title match, I would say. Those are probably the two that I'm looking forward to the most.
Wow, that's great. I mean, I was excited to hear that Thunder Rosa was coming. I mean, I was a big fan of her when NWA Power was going
on.
I really enjoyed that show.
Yeah, absolutely. She was... And the, you know, the funny thing about that is she was in Lucha Underground. She was, oh God, what was her name? Cobra Moon. She played Cobra Moon on Lucha Underground.
Oh, yeah?
That was her. And I never really thought anything of it. I'm like, all right, you know, because it was more character driven. It's not like I saw these great Cobra Moon matches. But as Thunder Rosa, when I got to see more of her, you know, in ring work, I became impressed, you know, by what she could do. And it took me a while to figure out, oh, that's Cobra Moon. You know, I didn't realize it right away. But yeah, she's another one. She's another, I guess, transplant from the Lucha Underground days.
Yeah, I'm excited for her to face Hikaru Shida. I got another question. I don't know if you saw. I'm sure you saw. Jon Moxley was announced as the number one
PWI.
One in top 500 for PWI.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, look, the PWI 500 to me, it probably means something to the wrestlers because they grew up on that. I grew up on it too. I was aware of it. I collected some of the issues. It was cool back in the day to care about it. To me, it's just a gimmick. I mean, what does it really mean? You know, so to me, it doesn't have the same kind of value or cachet that it had 20 years ago. To the wrestlers, it probably means something. It's an acknowledgement for them. If you're number one, who doesn't want to be number one, right? And like I said, a lot of them probably grew up on the PWI 500 being a really big deal. In 2020, it's just, I feel like, you know, it's not a big deal the way it used to be. So, you know, good for him. but I haven't seen the latest ranking. Usually it pisses me off somehow. There'll be somebody in that top 10 who I look at and go, what the hell is that person doing in the top 10? And then I just get angry, and I have to remind myself, like, it doesn't matter. Don't get upset. It's like the WWE Hall of Fame. You don't hear me talk about it anymore because it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. So every time somebody passes away or something happens, the first thing people say, oh, they should have been in the Hall of Fame. They should have been in the Hall. The world does not revolve around the PWI 500. The world does not revolve around the Hall of Fame. Like, it's really not that big of a deal. But good for him. You know, for him, it's probably a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I think someone better should have got number one. I mean, Moxie's reign, you know, I was glad he got the AEW title, and you know, he's doing a really good job. Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Moxley, but I don't know, it's been kind of a little bit of an underwhelming for me. But I'm not taking anything away from him. He's doing a really good job as champ. I guess I just expected more. But yeah, the PWI list, you know, everyone's making a big deal out of it. I don't see the big deal. It's just, you know, it's just one person. It's just, you know, everybody has a different opinion, and that's all it is.
That's it. Anything else?
No. That's awesome. That's about it. I'm glad to be on the show, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling. Call back again soon. He got through. Look at that. First time he got through. First caller of the night. Oh, it was love seeing that. I always love those first time ones who sometimes they're nervous. They're like, oh, should I call in? Should I not call in? Then they finally do. I'm like, what were you so worried about? You had nothing to be nervous about. Andy M with the $5. Keith Lee against Brock Lesnar. Well, we already got it in the Royal Rumble. I don't think it's going to get any better than that. Brock's reaction was great, right? Remember when Keith Lee came out? To his music, by the way. And Brock Lesnar looks over at Paul Heyman. He's like, oh, look at that. And Keith Lee gets in the ring. He's like, look at this big boy. And they fucking had Keith Lee stand toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar, right? 50,000 people in the stadium there in Houston. It was a great moment. And I feel like if they ever do Lee and Lesnar, I don't know that it's going to end as well for Keith Lee. But would I have an interest in seeing that match? Sure. Yeah, I would have an interest in seeing that match. I don't know that it's ever going to happen, but I would like to see that match one day. 8:04. How about that? 8:04. We'll do a few more, then we'll get out of here.
Hey, this is Steven from Virginia. Returning caller, long time.
Hey,
I did want to ask you, did you hear the news about Bullet Bob Armstrong?
I knew he was sick. I did not hear anything today about him. I did not know why.
I was doing a podcast earlier, and I read the tweet from Road Dogg that Bullet Bob passed away. Must have been today or recently.
Well, that's sad. I mean, I think it was kind of expected. I know that he had, I don't remember exactly what kind of cancer. I think it was cancer, but I don't remember exactly what kind. And I think he's an older man. He decided to forego treatment. And so once that announcement was made, the writing was kind of on the wall. The sad thing is, I think his wife also passed away, or she was very ill. Or did she pass away as well? I mean, I think it was both of his parents. It was just like a horrible year that the family's been having. So that's very sad. You know, Bullet Bob he's a legend. You know, he's a legend in the business. And yeah, I mean, you hate to hear about something like that, because right up until the point where he probably got really bad there at the end, I mean, Brian, you know, Road Dogg and Scott Armstrong, they would share pictures on social media of their dad, and he was still exercising and lifting weights and working out. So, you know, I guess he kept doing what he could do and living life until he just couldn't do it anymore. But I know he's been sick for a while. And when I heard that he was opting not to have treatment anymore, I mean, look, at that point, it just, you kind of know what's coming. But nothing ever really prepares you for that, unfortunately. You know, I know that feeling. So it sucks to lose a parent. And I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I figured you were going to cover it eventually. I just wanted to, I guess, get it out of the way. I did want to mention I was really happy last week with Brody Lee's win and the Dark Order finish to Dynamite last week. And mm-hmm. I did enjoy Dynamite this week, but didn't get the chance to catch up on all of it. But glad I could catch your stream. Is there a match for Brody Lee at All Out? I'm not caught up yet.
Nothing announced, no. I mean, unless they set something up on TV next week. It looked like they were maybe setting something up with Scorpio Sky. Now, Scorpio Sky just got a TNT title match, so I don't know if they're going to come back that quickly and give him another one. It would be kind of weird, I think, to have him get another match so quickly and then lose again, because I would not take the belt off Brody Lee. I mean, my God, as great as that angle was, can you imagine if they turn around and take the belt off him 2 weeks later, how horrible that would be? But it sure looked to me like maybe they were right. setting up a Scorpio Sky match. But nothing is official yet.
Yeah, I think Scorpio Sky is great. And I'm a fan of the Dark Order. I follow Evil Uno on Twitch. He's a nice guy.
Evil Uno. You know, Evil Uno. Gotta get it right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I know they're not for everyone, but I definitely enjoy seeing Brody Lee get this run that he's on right now. And, I did enjoy the MJF John Moxley contract signing. I thought it was entertaining when MJF was burying Hardcore Legends. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, he buried Onita.
His name dropped.
He buried Onita. He called him hot garbage. That. Hot garbage. That's very harsh.
I would want New Jack to hear that.
Onita, if Onita was in his prime in a match with MJF, he would fucking kill MJF. But that's what makes him such a great heel. You know, he can get away with saying shit like that and pissing people off.
Yeah, one of my favorite Onita matches is a barbed wire explosion match from Japan. It's just rewatchable for me. But
awesome.
Is there a chance that Brandi Rhodes could be taking a break like Cody is?
I don't see any reason for her not to. No, she wasn't on TV. It'd be crazy to bring her back so soon. So if Cody's going to be gone, then I think Brandi should be too. You know, the Dark Order, the final image was Cody and Brandi laid out. And if the husband is out, then the wife, you know, or vice versa, right? The wife is taken out, the husband, they kind of go together as a package deal there. So I would expect Brandi to be off TV for a little while. I guess Cody's off going to be filming that TV show on Stars, the Heels TV show. So they go into production next month, and I don't know how long that's going to take, but apparently he's got a role on the show. And I would be very surprised if he was not back sometime in, probably by early October, mid-October. He'll definitely be back before the next pay-per-view after All Out. I guess that's Full Gear in November.
One last thing before I go. I might have missed your comments earlier, but did you have any thoughts about Billy Corgan saying that, you know, he's happy to work with AEW?
Yeah, I talked about that earlier. For him, it's a sweetheart deal. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot going on with his company right now. He's got no TV. He's got no product. You know, Dave Lagana resigned. And the pandemic killed and stalled whatever momentum they had going earlier in the year. They were doing well, too, you know, based on things that Lagana and Corgan had publicly talked about. Bottom line-wise, you know, they were getting ready for that Crockett Cup show, and they were doing pretty damn well in the advance on it and everything, and merch was doing well. So everything just went to hell, in part because of the pandemic, and then Lagana was such a pivotal part of that operation and was responsible for so many different things, including much of the online content on their YouTube channel. And when he went away, I mean, those are big shoes to fill. And I don't know that they have found anybody new to kind of step in and replace him. So until they do that, there ain't going to be no NWA. And if you got people under contract you're paying who aren't working, and Billy Corgan can either take a phone call from or pick up the phone and call Tony Khan and get some of his NWA champions and talent on TNT. Why wouldn't you take that deal? So for them, it's a fucking sweetheart deal. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, it's interesting how some of the NWA people have kind of gone to AEW or Wade Barrett to NXT, but I won't hold you up any longer. Thank you for the time.
Awesome. Thank you for the questions. Call back soon. Sweetheart deal, man, for the NWA. Again, I'm kind of surprised it came together, honestly. I'm still waiting for that partnership with New Japan and AEW, but I guess right now it wouldn't matter anyway because you can't travel. But when this travel stuff is lifted or it begins to lift, and at some point next year, hopefully we can start to get back to normal. I have no idea when that'll be, but hopefully sooner than later. Tonight was a good first step as far as watching the show. Again, fan-wise, just hearing that crowd, it was almost therapeutic in a way. Let's go to 641.
Hi, Solid Monster. I'm a second-time caller. My name is Jesse. I'm from Newton, Iowa. I've been listening to you since 2013. Huge fan of yours.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to tell you what I thought about tonight's show, and I have a quick question for you, and then I'll let you go.
Sure.
So I thought tonight's show was pretty all right. It wasn't the best AEW I've seen since they've been doing them. It wasn't that bad. I just enjoyed the past couple weeks a little more than this episode, and I enjoyed NXT a little more than AEW tonight.
I did too. I agree with that. I enjoyed the NXT show last night, and I'm very much looking forward to the main event next week. That Fatal 4-Way Iron Man match, I think, is going to be pretty nuts. This was a good show, but again, not their best effort. I would give NXT the edge this week.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. The highlights for me on this episode was FTR winning the tag team gauntlet. I'm very glad they won. The contract signing was good. The main event could have been better. I agree with you that when the Elite kicked out Omega, that was really corny as hell.
Hangman.
So yeah. Yeah, my bad.
I was gonna say, did I miss a major story on this show?
No, I meant
okay.
Page.
All right, I figured.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah. And the quick question I wanna ask you before I let you go tonight, so you take a few more calls, is do you think the Miyamosa Mayhem match between Omega or not? Sorry, Jericho and Orange Cassidy is too gimmicky?
Well, it's the Mimosa match. That's right, Mimosa Mayhem or whatever he's
Mimosa,
calling it.
Yeah, my.
I don't know. I mean, it is hokey, but you know what? It kind of fits in line with, I guess, the story. I mean, Orange Cassidy is treated as, I don't want to say he's treated as a comedy gimmick completely because they've tried to position him as more of a main eventer. I don't necessarily, and I like Orange Cassidy, don't get me wrong, but I don't see him as somebody who is going to be sustained in that role. He's not a main event player to me anyway. He can have a few main events, but he's not a main eventer. That's somebody like a Jericho, like an Omega, Cody, Hangman, and eventually maybe people like a Darby and a Sammy and an Orange Cassidy will get there as well. So this is pretty much in line with what I would expect. This is the big blow-off, and there's been a lot of comedy involved in this storyline mixed in with the serious stuff. I don't really have an issue with it. It's fine.
And one last thing is the derecho storm that swept through the Midwest knocked my electric out for over a week.
Oh, wow.
And while I didn't have power, while I did not have power, that almost over a week, I listened to some of your old streams and reviews of stuff. Since I couldn't listen to you live, and I had to watch the last two episodes of Dynamite back to back.
So
on DVR.
how are things now where you are? Is it quiet? Is it?
Everybody's got their electric back mostly, but the derecho is like, it's like a midland hurricane. It's like a storm I've never seen before. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the images on TV, you know, obviously are scary, and depending on where you are and if you're in the eye of the storm, it can be pretty bad. So hopefully everybody is safe where you are, and power for a week. I went through a blackout last year where I had no power for about 3.5 days, and yeah, everything in the fridge spoiled. So once you get power back, you have to sit there and itemize every item and send the bill to the power company, so at least they reimburse me for all the shit that went bad. Because in my case, they intentionally cut the power. They were worried that there would be some kind of an outage and something would explode, so they made the choice themselves to cut our power and then kept it off for 3 days. So yeah, you're going to pay for my food. There was never any doubt.
Yeah.
Like, there was never any doubt. I would have physically gone down there and they would have paid for my food. So they paid. And hopefully that will not happen again.
Well, that's all I wanted to say. You have a good one tonight.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's see here. Dried chicken. I feel like Big Swole getting that kayfabe suspension really lost my interest towards the Baker and Swole match. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I still don't understand why they did that. It was just ridiculous to me. Because their division was already lacking, and now you took away for a number of weeks, unless she had some personal reason to be off TV or an injury or something. You took Swole away. Yeah, you need to be adding people to the women's division, not taking them away. And they concocted like a storyline suspension, and it just felt like the wrong time for that. Ryan Spies with the $5. Since Griff Garrison is part of the new Hollywood Blondes with Pillman Jr., he could be considered the new Steve Austin. Well, that's some big shoes to fill. I would not put that on him. But if he turns out to be the next Steve Austin, then Tony Khan better hold on to him like, well, I don't know. I don't know like what, but he better hold on to him. And Big Al made it, sending you a huge shout out from Friday afternoon in Japan. Thank you always, especially this week. You're the best. Quick question, who is or was the more disappointing champion, Strowman or Moxley? Strowman. Braun Strowman. And you know, about Braun Strowman, I watched the WrestleMania 36 documentary that just went up on the network, WWE 24. They do great work with these documentaries. So they built an entire one around WrestleMania 36, getting ready to go to the stadium, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, then COVID hits, and then they have to put it at the Performance Center, and everybody, you know, Rhea Ripley is disappointed, and Drew McIntyre is disappointed. Strowman didn't have a match, and they interviewed Braun Strowman, and he had just driven 21 hours home. He got home after a 21-hour drive and got a call from Mark Carano saying, hey, so we need you to come on back. There's been a change of plans. That was when Roman Reigns bowed out of WrestleMania. So at least they didn't force him to drive 21 hours back. They sent a plane to the local landing strip where he lives, pick him up. And that's when they gave him the news when he arrived back in Orlando that he would be challenging Bill Goldberg for the championship. But I bring this up because even though I think Strowman had a very lackluster run as champion, it didn't help giving him handicap matches on pay-per-view with Miz and Morrison. I mean, who could possibly care? But in this special, he comes across as a genuine guy. He gets very emotional talking about what that moment meant to him. He gets very emotional talking about being bullied as a kid, and they have pictures of him when he was a kid. And, you know, he was just kind of this big, aloof, you know, heavy kid. Wasn't in the kind of physical shape he is in now. And he was being bullied and he was being picked on. And clearly, after all these years, it still bothers him. Because that stuff doesn't go away. You know, you hear that a lot from people who get bullied and picked on. As the years go on, you know, you don't forget that. You don't forget that. So he starts crying. He just starts getting emotional. His eyes are welling up. And, you know, he kind of tells the story about going to this guy who you know, lifted at the gym. I forgot the guy's name. He's like, can you help me, please? Can you help me? And that's where he got his training started. So he goes through the whole story and his journey to get to where he is. Because Strowman has made some really dumb comments on social media sometimes. And does not always come across as the most likable person. But I thought in this special he came across likable. I kind of wish they would have told more of that story on TV, but you can't do that, right? Because that's not his character. He's, you know, I'm the monster among men. That's Braun Strowman. And we can't learn about the fucking person behind the gimmick. So he's very vanilla. He comes out on TV and, you know, he puts his arms in the air. It's like, okay, who gives a fuck? You know, like, tell me. Give me a reason to want to see this guy succeed. Give me a reason to want to be interested in him. Or if you want to turn him heel and make him a monster, then go ahead and do that. But as the babyface champion, he didn't do anything for me. So that's my long way of saying I'll buy on Jon Moxley. We'll turn this into a buy or sell. Buy on Jon Moxley's title run so far, which hasn't been that much better. But I would buy on that and sell on Strowman and his babyface run as the Universal Champion. That really didn't do much for me. Didn't do much for me. Dry chicken again, man. Dry chicken without flavor. The Dark Order was right on BTE last Monday. Fock Hangman. Super Chat will not let me say the F word. Yes. No cursing in the Super Chats. It will be censored. Private Party hates him, and the Bucks hate him as well. Yeah, Hangman's all alone. Hangman, he allowed FTR to manipulate him. They took advantage of him. Now he will realize this. And now they're going to have a match, right? So now they're going to be enemies. They're going to be on opposing sides at the pay-per-view. And then he's going to get double-fucked because FTR is going to win the belts from Hangman and Omega. Just like Sasha and Bayley are probably dropping their belts at Payback on Sunday. God, I can't believe we have another pay-per-view. Can't believe this. I can't believe we have another pay-per-view this weekend. Oh, my God. Good God almighty. Let's go to Puerto Rico.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. So, first time calling. Excited. Nervous. Awesome. As most are. And obviously because of kind of a cultural thing. I'm not sure if you've been corrected by now. I'm sure you have because it's been a week. But last week when it was Ibelis and Diamante, it was the Cuban and Puerto Rican flags, not just Puerto Rican flags.
Yeah, I heard that from a few people. I didn't even notice. I just saw the flags were handed over, and I just assumed they were handing the same flag to both of them. But I had three people point out to me that one was the Puerto Rican flag and that Diamante had the Cuban flag. So yes, I was corrected, I think, as soon as the video went up. There were comments about it, so it didn't take very long.
Okay. Sorry, I just had to. I couldn't help myself.
That's okay.
Anyway, I had to agree with most people. Like, it's a good episode tonight, but not the best. And when it comes to what I enjoyed the most, should I say, right? It had to be the Hangman story, because that's what got me hooked from the very beginning, ever since it started. Like, Hangman has just been, like, been one of the MVPs for me when it comes to AEW. And you mentioned Matt's bad acting. I genuinely didn't notice it because I was just focused on Hangman. So that just said something about me paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, it was awful. I mean, he was trying to cry or something, and it was just like a bad skit, like something you would see on BTE and not a serious angle where they were kicking this guy out of their faction. So it just didn't work. Hangman was fine. He didn't do much because, you know, he's the silent guy there. But yeah, Matt's fake crying just killed that whole segment for me.
What was the other thing? Right. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the whole thing with All Out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely keep forgetting that the pay-per-view is so close. So I'm hoping that next week there's a very good go-home show. Otherwise, it feels like, I feel like I might forget and actually not buy the pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you guys need to do something. Let me hype.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I think they will. They usually do pretty well with those things. I wouldn't be shocked if we're getting a backlash just to kind of flood the market so that people... So maybe less people will buy All Out. Let's just put another pay-per-view on after SummerSlam. That way people will have no money and they won't be able to buy the pay-per-view coming up next week. That's the conspiracy theorist in me wondering why we're getting this payback pay. I'm going to divert for a second here. I have to make this point before I forget. So there were people asking the question to me. They were sending me emails a few weeks ago when the news first came out. Why is there a payback pay-per-view? And I said, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. I would imagine that coming out of SummerSlam, something big is going to happen. And then the next night on TV, they're going to be like, well, this has to be resolved. And so we're going to have this event next Sunday called Payback. But that's not what they did. They literally had the announcers 2 weeks before SummerSlam on just very casually on TV or a week before, whatever it was, mentioned that, oh, yeah, on August 30th, we're going to have this show called Payback. It's like, oh, okay. So there's no rhyme or reason for it happening. They just wanted to add another show that was there on the schedule already. And nothing coming out of the pay-per-view necessitated them doing this additional show. And I just think it's like the whole thing where, oh, it's October. It's time to do Hell in a Cell. Like, things don't mean what they should. There should be a reason why these things are happening. And instead, it's just the case of, well, it's that time of year, or, yeah, we're just going to add another pay-per-view. We'll call it Payback and throw some rematches or some other matches on there. I just wish they would have done a better job of, like, explaining it. Don't say anything. And then on Monday, just be like, oh, man, you know, Roman Reigns came out and wrecked people at the end of the event. So they want a piece of Roman. Roman wants a piece of them. And it's a match too big for TV. So we're going to have this show and we're going to call it Payback and it's going to be next Sunday. Like, at least do something like that. You know what I mean? I just had to make
that involves point. More this logic than
annoys
the
me.
You, I think so.
I know. I get myself in trouble with that, but it still bugs me.
Naturally.
Yeah. If I were going to be a wrestler in WWE, my name would be Logic. That would be my name. Logic. And they would beat me like a drum every week because that's what they do. They beat all the logic into the ground. Anything else?
No, that was it. Just thank you for everything you do. Thank you for entertaining us. And thank you for going through all the strangeness that WWE puts out these days, because I'm not watching anymore, but I am keeping up with podcasts and stuff like that. So thank you for going through the most annoying bit, so I don't have to.
Well, you're welcome. I get more messages like that than you would know from people telling me the exact same thing, which in a way is kind of sad, but I think it's kind of cool that they at least are trying to keep up with it. So as long as you keep listening, I'll be here.
All right. Thanks, bro.
Awesome.
Good night.
You too. Have a good one. Man, I get so many messages. You have no idea how many emails and tweets I get from people. I don't watch anymore. I just stopped. Or I haven't watched in 3 years or 6 months, and all I do is watch you or listen to your shows. I have no idea what's going on with WWE outside of what I hear on your shows. So, yeah, it's important. People, wrestling fans don't want to not watch wrestling. I think it's hard. It's like once it gets in your blood, you know what I mean? Like, it's just hard. You can't, I feel like, there are people in the world, like if you're a kid, you get to a point where if you're watching wrestling when you're really young, like this happened with a lot of my friends, you either grow out of it, as a lot of them do, or you're a schmuck like me, you get even more into it, and it's like it's with you for life. So when you've been watching it for 25, 30, 35 years, it's hard to just turn it off, you know, because you've been watching it and enjoying it for so long, you want to enjoy it, but they just make it so hard sometimes. And, yeah, people want to maintain that connection. So what do? Outside of watching clips on YouTube from Raw that they upload and stuff, they listen to podcasts and they watch YouTube videos. And YouTubers, you know, who are personalities in and of themselves. So that's how they entertain themselves. They say, oh, I'm going to watch these guys. I have more in common with these guys than I do watching anything on WWE. And some people may feel the same way about AEW. I'm not just trying to pick on WWE. It's just that it's a lot of WWE fans that email me telling me that they've been chased away. You know, I'm talking fans of like 20, 30 years who just couldn't take it anymore. But they're not quite ready to totally throw in the towel and give up just yet. But I am, I think, here on this stream here. Once I get through these last few super chats, we've gone 2 hours. It's longer than I wanted to go, but I always get wrapped up in the calls with you guys, which is fine. That's all good. I love hearing from you guys. So let me just take a look here at where we are with the super chats. We did have, I think I'm all caught up. Actually, I think that was Dry Chicken. So. His message got retracted. I can only imagine what that was. But thank you, Dried. I don't know what you said, but thank you. I appreciate that. Here's the poll. Again, I want you guys to go on Twitter and follow me, first of all, if you're not following, at Solomonster. So whenever I have something to say, you'll be the first to know. 81.8% thumbs up, 18.2% thumbs down. So that's an overwhelmingly positive score. We're going to see what the numbers are tomorrow. How did it do on a Thursday as compared to a Saturday? What do you guys think? Do you think Dynamite is going to outperform on a Thursday what they did on Saturday? They did 755,000 last Saturday. So for a Thursday show, what was the competition tonight? I'm not sure. But we'll find out tomorrow. We will see what the deal is tomorrow as far as that goes. All right, guys, listen, this has been fun. Thank you for all of your support, all of your super chats. Hopefully YouTube doesn't shit the bed tonight and everything is working fine. And we'll get that taken care of here in a few minutes. I'm going to be back with you live on YouTube Sunday night. But before then, I'm going to be recording episode 667 of the Sound Off Sunday morning. So figure like early afternoon at some point that episode will drop audio. And then that night, immediately after Payback, I'm going to be right back here on YouTube with you again. Next Tuesday is a special Tuesday episode of NXT. Fatal 4-Way Iron Man match to crown a new NXT champion. I'm going to be back here with you talking about that show. And then the next night on Wednesday, back in its normal slot, AEW Dynamite, right back here for the review on YouTube. And then that weekend, September 5th, Saturday night, is AEW All Out. And I'm going to be back here yet again. So I ain't going nowhere. You're getting more of me now than you have all year long. August and September has turned out to be probably the busiest time of year for me. Dry Chicken, I did get your message here. This is doubtful, but what if Nick Aldis was the fourth member of the new Four Horsemen in AEW? As part of their partnership. I that seems to me that would be a very high profile spot for a guy who's never appeared on this show before. I don't like that. I'd rather they just kind of, if they're going to kick it off, just kick it off with some of the guys who have already been established. Could Aldis end up in a role like that? He could. I kind of envision that spot being for Cody, though, whenever he's ready to come back. So maybe Cody and Arn end up joining that group. Cody's the one walking around in the suits, right, and all that. So I think Aldis would do well in that role, but I don't see it. I think that's very unlikely. Very unlikely. And Naif Al-Safar with the 10 bucks getting in right at the buzzer. Naif is one of our big supporters. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I don't even know if it popped up on screen yet, but I saw it in the chat. So thank you for the support. The NXT streams, by the way, are not a permanent thing. So I don't want people thinking I'm just going to start doing NXT reviews every week. Once the schedule gets normal again and the shows are back on the same night, I'm not doubling up on the shows. We're going to do AEW, and I will save the NXT reviews for Sunday as I always do. But, you know, when I have a free night where there's no AEW to watch, yeah, I'm going to talk about NXT. I'm going to give you guys a stream. So anyway, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great rest of the week. I will try to get some rest myself. And again, thank you all for your continued support. And I will see you this weekend. A lot more coverage coming up. Join me then right here back on YouTube. Take care, guys.